Sanitarium. I am your host, Troy. It is the second episode back from my hiatus. I appreciate everyone who stuck around and decided to stay subscribed. And I hope that the people I lost die a horrible death. So, we are going to be talking about the brand new season of Sci-Fi's original series, and I use original with gigantic air quotes, Channel Zero. Now, the second season, they decided to go with no end house. And personally, the creepypasta no end house, I wasn't a huge fan of. But I'm interested to see on what they're going to do with the series. And I also decided what I was going to do is do a little something different this time. I'm actually going to read the original story, No End House, and then get into the episode. No End House is, you know, it's a little long, but it's not that long. It's enough that I can read it and not lose everybody. So, obviously, you know, this is just the basis for the series. And also, No End House was written by Brian Russell, who you can find at frombriansdesk.blogspot.com. And you can also check out creepypasta.wikia.com/wiki/no_end_house to read this yourself. So, without further ado, here is No End House. Let me start by saying that Peter Terry was addicted to heroin. We were friends in college and continued to be after I graduated. Notice that I said I. He dropped out after 2 years of barely cutting it. After I moved out of the dorms and into a small apartment, I didn't see Peter as much. We would talk online every now and then. AIM was king in pre-Facebook years. There was a period where he wasn't online for about 5 weeks straight, and I was worried. He was a pretty notorious flake and drug addict, so I assumed he just stopped caring. Then one night, I saw him log on. Before I could initiate a conversation, he sent me a message. David, man, we need to talk. That was when he told me about the No End House. I got that name because no one had ever reached the final exit. The rules were pretty simple and cliche. Reach the final room of the building and you win $500. There were 9 rooms in all. The house was located outside the city, roughly 4 miles from my house. Apparently Peter had tried and failed. He was a heroin addict and who knows what the fuck addict. So I figured the drugs got the best of him and he wigged out at a paper ghost or something. He told me it would be too much for anyone. That it was unnatural. I didn't believe him. I told him I would check it out the next night, and no matter how hard he tried to convince me otherwise, $500 sounded too good to be true. I had to go. I set out the following night. When I arrived, I immediately noticed something strange about the building. Have you ever seen or read something that shouldn't be scary, but for some reason a chill crawls up your spine? I walked toward the building, and the feeling of uneasiness only intensified as I opened the door. My heart slowed, and I let a relieved sigh leave me as I entered. The room looked like a normal hotel lobby, decorated for Halloween. A sign was posted in place of a worker. It read, Room 1, this way. 8 more follow. Reach the end and you win. I chuckled and made my way to the first door. The first area was almost laughable. The decor resembled the Halloween aisle of a Kmart, complete with sheet ghosts and animatronic zombies that gave a static growl when you passed by. At the far end was an exit. It was the only door besides the one I entered through. I brushed through the fake spider webs and headed for the second room. I was greeted by fog as I opened the door to room 2. The room definitely upped the ante in terms of technology. Not only was there a fog machine, but a bat hung from the ceiling and flew in a circle. Ooh, scary. They seemed to have a Halloween soundtrack that one would find at a 99-cent store on loop somewhere in the room. I didn't see the stereo, but I guess they must have had a PA system. I stepped over a few toy rats, then wheeled around and walked with a puffed chest across to the next area. I reached for the doorknob and my heart sank to my knees. I did not want to open that door. A feeling of dread hit me so hard I could barely even think. Logic overtook me after a few terrified moments, and I shook it off and entered the next room. Room 3 is when things began to change. Now, on the surface, it looked like a normal room. There was a chair on the middle of the wood-paneled floor. A single lamp in the corner did a poor job lighting the area, casting a few shadows across the floor and walls. That was the problem. Shadows. Plural. With the exception of the chairs, there were others. I had barely walked in the door and I was already terrified. It was at that moment that I knew something wasn't right. I didn't even think as I automatically tried to open the door I came through, but it was locked from the other side. That set me off. Was someone locking the doors as I progressed? There was no way. I would have heard them. Was it a mechanical lock that set automatically? Maybe. But I was too scared to really think. I turned back to the room, and shadows were gone. The chair shadow remained, but the others were gone. I slowly began to walk. I used to hallucinate when I was a kid, so I wrote off the shadows as a figment of my imagination. I began to feel better as I made it to the hallway halfway point of the room. I looked down as I took my steps, and that's when I saw it. Or didn't see it. My shadow wasn't there. I didn't have time to screen. I ran as fast as I could to the other door and flung myself without thinking into the room beyond. The fourth room was possibly the most disturbing. As I closed the door, all light seemed to be sucked out and put back into the previous room. I stood there, surrounded by darkness, not able to move. Now, I'm not afraid of the dark, and never have been, but I was absolutely terrified. All sight had left me. I held my hand in front of my face, and if I didn't know what I was doing, I would never have been able to tell. Darkness doesn't describe it. I couldn't hear anything. It was dead silent. When you're in a soundproof room, you can still hear yourself breathing. You can hear yourself being alive. I couldn't. I began to stumble forward for a few moments, my rapidly beating heart the only thing I could feel. There was no door in sight. I wasn't even sure there was one this time. The silence was unbroken by a low hum. I felt something right behind me. I spun around wildly, but could barely even see my nose. I knew it was there, though. Regardless of how dark it was, I knew something was there. The hum grew louder, closer. It seemed to surround me, but I knew whatever was causing the noise was in front of me, inching closer. I took a step back. I had never felt that kind of fear. I can't really describe true fear. I wasn't even scared I was going to die. I was scared of what the alternative was. I was afraid of what this thing had in store for me. Then the lights flashed for a second, and I saw it. Nothing. I saw nothing, and I know I saw nothing there. The room was again plunged into darkness, and the hum became a wild screech. I screamed in protest. I couldn't hear this goddamn sound for another minute. I ran backwards, away from the noise, and fumbled for the door handle. I turned and fell into room 5. Before I describe room 5, you have to understand something. I am not a drug addict. I have had no history of drug abuse or any sort of psychosis short of the childhood hallucinations I mentioned earlier. And those were only when I was really tired or just waking up. I entered the No Way House with a clear head. After falling in from the previous room, my view of room 5 was from my back, looking up at the ceiling. What I saw didn't scare me, it simply surprised me. Trees had grown into the room and towered above my head. The ceilings of the room were taller than the others, which made me think I was at the center of the house. I got up off the floor, dusted myself off, and took a look around. It was definitely the biggest room of them all. I couldn't even see the door from where I was. Various brush and trees must have blocked my line of sight with the exit. Up to this point, I figured the rooms were going to get scarier, but this was a paradise compared to the last room. I also assumed whatever was in room 4 stayed back there. I was incredibly wrong. As I made my way deeper into the room, I began to hear what one would hear if they were in a forest. Chirping birds and the occasional flap of wings of birds seemed to be my only companion in this room. That was the thing that bothered me the most. I heard the bugs and other animals, but I didn't see any of them. I began to wonder how big this house was. From the outside, when I first walked up to it, it looked like a regular house. It was definitely on the bigger side, but this was almost a full forest in here. The canopy covered my view of the ceiling, but I assumed it was still there, however high it was. I couldn't see any walls either. The only way I knew I was still inside was that the floor matched the other rooms, the standard dark wood paneling. I kept walking, hoping that the next tree I passed would reveal the door. After a few moments of walking, I felt a mosquito fly into my arm. I shook it off and kept going. A second later, I felt 10 more land on my skin at different places. I felt them crawl up and down my legs and arms, and a few made their way across my face. I flailed wildly at them, all off, but they just kept crawling. I looked down and let out a muffled scream. More of a whimper, to be honest. I didn't see a single bug. Not one bug was on me, but I could feel them crawl. I heard them fly in my face and sting my skin, but I couldn't see a single one. I dropped to the ground and began to roll wildly. I was desperate. I hated bugs, especially ones I couldn't see or touch. But these bugs could touch me, and they were everywhere. I began to crawl. I had no idea where I was going. The entrance was nowhere in sight, and I still hadn't even seen the exit, so I just crawled. My skin wriggled, and the presence of those phantom bugs. After what seemed like hours, I found the door. I grabbed the nearest tree and propped myself up, mindlessly slapping my arms and legs to no avail. I tried to run, but I couldn't. My body was exhausted from crawling and dealing with whatever it was that was on me. I took a few shaky steps to the door, grabbing each tree on the way for support. It was only a few feet away when I heard it, the low hum from before. It was coming from the next room, and it was deeper. I could almost feel it inside my body, like when you stand next to an amp at a concert. The feeling of bugs on me lessened as the hum grew louder. As I placed my hand on the doorknob, the bugs were completely gone, but I couldn't bring myself to turn the knob. I knew that if I let go, the bugs would return, and there was no way I would make it back to room 4. I just stood there, my head pressed against the door mark 6, and my hand shakily grasping the knob. The hum was so loud I couldn't even hear myself pretend to think. There was nothing I could do but move on. Room 6 was next, and room 6 was hell. I closed the door behind me, my eyes held shut and my ears ringing. The hum was surrounding me. As the door clicked into place, the hum was gone. I opened my eyes in surprise, and the door I had shut was gone. It was just a wall now. I looked around in shock. The room was identical to room 3, same chair and lamp, but with the correct amount of shadows this time. The only real difference was that there was no exit door, and the one I came in through was gone. As I said before, I had no previous issues in terms of mental instability, but at that moment, I fell into what I now know was insanity. I didn't scream. I didn't make a sound. At first, I scratched softly. The wall was tough, but I knew the door was there somewhere. I just knew it was. I scratched it where the doorknob was. I clawed at the wall frantically with both hands, my nails being filed down to the skin against the wood. I fell silently to my knees. The only sound of the room, the incessant scratching against the wall. I knew it was there. The door was there, and I knew it was just there. I knew if I could just get past the wall. Are you all right? I jumped off the ground and spun in one motion. I leaned against the wall behind me and saw what it was that spoke to me. To this day, I regret ever turning around. There was a little girl. She was wearing a soft white dress that went down to her ankles. She had long blonde hair in the middle of her back and white skin and blue eyes. She was the most frightening thing I had ever seen. And I know that nothing in my life will ever be as unnerving as what I saw in her. While looking at her, I saw something else. Where she stood, I saw what looked like a man's body, only larger than normal, and covered in hair. He was naked from head to toe, but his head was not human, and his toes were hooves. It wasn't the devil, but at that moment, it might as well have been. The form had the head of a ram and a snout of a wolf. It was horrifying, and it was synonymous with the little girl in front of me. They were the same form. I couldn't really describe it, but I saw them at the same time. They shared the same spot in that room, but it was like looking in two separate dimensions. When I saw the girl, I saw the form, and when I saw the form, I saw the girl. I couldn't speak, I could barely even see. My mind was revolting against what it was attempting to process. I had been scared before in my life, and I have never been more scared than when I was trapped in the fourth room, but that was before room 6. I just stood there staring at whatever it was that spoke to me. There was no exit. I was trapped here with it. And then it spoke again. David, you should have listened. When it spoke, I heard the words of the little girl, but the other form spoke through my mind in a voice I wouldn't attempt to describe. There was no other sound. The voice just kept repeating that sentence over and over in my mind, and I agreed. I didn't know what to do. I was slipping into madness, yet I couldn't take my eyes off what was in front of me. I dropped to the floor. I thought I had passed out, but the room wouldn't let me. I just wanted it to end. I was on my side, my eyes wide open, and the form staring down at me, scurrying across the floor. In front of me was one of the battery-powered rats from the second room. The house was toying with me, but for some reason, seeing that rat pulled my mind back from whatever depths it was headed, and I looked around the room. I was getting out of here. I was determined to get out of that house and live and never think of this place again. I knew this room was hell, and I wasn't ready to take up residency. At first, it was just my eyes that moved. I searched the walls for any kind of opening. The room wasn't that big, so it didn't take me long to soak up the entire layout. The demon still taunted me, the voice growing louder as the form stayed rooted where it stood. I placed my hand on the floor, lifted myself up on all fours, and turned to scan the wall behind me. And then I saw something I couldn't believe. The form was now right at my back, whispering into my mind how I shouldn't have come. I felt its breath on the back of my neck, but I refused to turn around. A large rectangle was scratched into the wood, with a small dent chipped away at the center of it. Right in front of my eyes, I saw the large 7 I had mindlessly etched into the wall. I knew what it was. Room 7 was just behind the wall, where room 5 was moments ago. I don't know how I did it. Maybe it was just my state of mind at the time, but I had created the door. I knew I had. In my madness, I had scratched into the wall what I needed the most, an exit to the next room. Room 7 was close. I knew the demon was right behind me, but for some reason, it couldn't touch me. I closed my eyes and placed both hands on the large 7 in front of me. I pushed. I pushed as hard as I could. The demon was now screaming in my ear. It told me I was never leaving. It told me that this was the end, but I wasn't going to die. I was going to live here in room 6 with it. I wasn't. I pushed and screamed at the top of my lungs. I knew it was going to push through the wall eventually. I clenched my eyes shut and screamed, and the demon was gone. I was left in silence. I turned around slowly and was greeted by the room that it was when I entered, just a chair and a lamp. I couldn't believe it, but I didn't have time to wail. I turned back to the 7 and jumped back slightly. What I saw was a door. It wasn't the one I had scratched in, but a regular door with a large 7 on it. My whole body was shaken. It took me a while to turn the knob. I just stood there for a while, staring at the door. I couldn't stay at room 6. I couldn't. But if this was only room 6, I couldn't imagine what 7 had in store. I must have stood there for an hour, just staring at the 7. Finally, with a deep breath, I twisted the knob and opened the room to door 7. I stumbled through the door, mentally exhausted and physically weak. The door behind me closed, and I realized where I was. I was outside. Not outside like room 5, but actually outside. My eyes stung. I wanted to cry. I fell to my knees and tried, but I couldn't. I was finally out of that hell. I didn't even care about the prize that was promised. I turned and saw that the door I went through was the entrance. I walked to my car and drove home, thinking of how nice the shower sounded. As I pulled up to my house, I felt uneasy. The joy of leaving No End House had faded, and dread was slowly building in my stomach. I shook it off as residual from the house and made my way to the front door. I entered and immediately went up to my room. There on my bed was my cat, Baskerville. He was the first living thing I had seen all night, and I reached to pet him. He hissed and swiped at my hand. I recoiled in shock, as he had never acted like that before. I just thought, whatever, he's a wee old cat. I jumped in the shower and got ready for what I was expecting to be a sleepless night. After my shower, I went to the kitchen to make something to eat. I descended the stairs and turned into the family room. What I saw would be forever burned in my mind, however. My parents were lying on the ground, naked and covered in blood. They were mutilated to near unidentifiable states. Their limbs were removed and placed next to their bodies, and their heads were placed on their chest facing me. The most unsettling part was their expressions. They were smiling, as though they were happy to see me. I vomited and sobbed there in the family room. I didn't know what had happened. They didn't even live with me at the time. I was a mess. Then I saw it. A door that was never there before. A door with a large 8 scrawled on it in blood. I was still in the house. I was standing in my family room, but I was in room 7. The faces of my parents smiled wider as I realized this. They weren't my parents, they couldn't be, but they looked exactly like them. The door marked 8 was across the room, behind the mutilated bodies in front of me. I knew I had to move on, but at that moment I gave up. smiling faces tore into my mind. They grounded me where I stood. I vomited again and nearly collapsed. Then the hum returned. It was louder than ever, and it filled the house and shook the walls. The hum compelled me to walk. I began to walk slowly, making my way closer to the door and the bodies. I could barely stand, let alone walk, and the closer I got to my parents, the closer I came to suicide. The walls were now shaken so hard, it seemed as though they were going to crumble. But still the faces smiled at me. As I inched closer, their eyes followed me. I was now between the two bodies, a few feet away from the door. The dismembered hands clawed their way across the carpet towards me, all while the faces continued to stare. New terror washed over me, and I walked faster. I didn't want to hear them speak. I didn't want the voices to match those of my parents. They began to open their mouths, and their hands were inches from my feet. In a dash of desperation, I lunged towards the door, threw it open, and slammed it right behind me. Roommate. I was done. After what I had just experienced, I knew there wasn't anything else this fucking house could throw at me that I couldn't live through. It was nothing short of the fires of hell that I wasn't ready for. Unfortunately, I underestimated the abilities of No End House. Unfortunately, things got more disturbing, more terrifying, and more unspeakable in Room 8. I still have trouble believing what I saw in Room 8. Again, the room was a carbon copy of Rooms 3 and 6, but sitting in the usually empty chair was a man. After a few seconds of disbelief, my mind finally accepted the fact that this man sitting in the chair was me. Not someone who looked like me. It was David Williams. I walked closer. I had to get a better look, even though I was sure of it. He looked up at me and I noticed tears in his eyes. Please, please don't do it. Please don't hurt me. What? I asked. Who are you? I'm not going to hurt you. Yes, you are. He was sobbing now. You're going to hurt me, and I don't want you to. He sat in the chair with his legs open and began rocking back and forth. It was actually pretty pathetic looking, especially since he was me, identical in every way. Listen, who are you? I was not only a few feet from my doppelganger. It was the weirdest experience yet, standing there talking to myself. I wasn't scared, but I would be soon. Why are you? You're going to hurt me. You're going to hurt me. If you want to live, to leave, you're going to hurt me. Why are you saying this? Just calm down, okay? Let's try to figure this. And then I saw it. David sitting down was wearing the same clothes as me, except for a small red patch on his shirt embroidered with the number 9. You're going to hurt me. You're going to hurt me. Please don't. You're going to hurt me. My eyes didn't leave the small number on his chest. I knew exactly what it was. The first few doors were plain and simple, but after a while they got a little bit more ambiguous. 7 was scratched into the wall, but by my own hands. 8 was marked in blood above the bodies of my parents, but 9, this number was on a person, a living person. Worse still, it was on a person that looked exactly like me. David? I had asked. Yes, you're going to hurt me, you're going to hurt me. He continued to sob and rock. He answered to David, he was me, right down to the voice, but that 9... I paced around for a few moments while he sobbed in his chair. The room had no door, and similar to room 6, the door I came through was gone. For some reason, I assumed that scratching would get me nowhere this time. I studied the walls and floor around the chair, sticking my head underneath and seeing if anything was below. Unfortunately, there was. Below the chair was a knife. Attached was a tag that read, "To David, from management." That feeling in my stomach as I read that tag was something sinister. I wanted to throw up, and the last thing I wanted to do was remove that knife from under the chair. The other David was still sobbing uncontrollably. My mind was spinning into an attic of unanswerable questions. Who put this here, and how did they get my name? Not to mention the fact that, as I knelt on the cold wood floor, I also sat in the chair, sobbing in protest of being hurt by myself. It was all too much to progress. The house and the management had been playing with me this whole time. My thoughts for some reason turned to Peter, and whether or not he got this far. If he did, if he met a Peter Terry, sobbing in his very chair, rocking back and forth. I shook those thoughts out of my head. They didn't matter. I took the knife from under the chair, and immediately the other David went quiet. David, he said in my voice, what do you think you're going to do? I lifted myself from the ground and clenched the knife in my hand. I'm going to get out of here. David was sitting in the chair, though he was very calm now. He looked up at me with a slight grin. I couldn't tell if he was going to laugh or strangle me. Slowly, he got up from the chair and stood facing me. It was uncanny. His height and even the way he stood matched mine. I felt the rubber hilt of the knife in my hand and gripped it tighter. I don't know what I was planning to do with it, but I had a feeling I was going to need it. Now, his voice was slightly deeper than my own, I'm going to hurt you. I'm going to hurt you, and I'm going to keep you here. I didn't respond. I just lunged and tackled him to the ground. I had mounted him and looked down, knife poised and ready. He looked up at me, terrified. It's like I was looking in a mirror. Then the hum returned, low and distant. Though I still felt it deep in my body. David looked up at me as I looked down at myself. The hum was getting louder and I felt something inside me snap. With one motion, I slammed the knife into the patch on his chest and ripped down. Blackness fell in the room, and I was falling. The darkness around me was like nothing I had ever experienced up to that point. Room 4 was dark, but it didn't come close to what was completely engulfing me. I wasn't even sure if I was falling for a while. I felt weightless, covered in dark, until then a deep sadness came over me. I felt lost, depressed, and suicidal. The sight of my parents entered my mind. I knew it wasn't real, but I had seen it, and the mind was having trouble differentiating between what is and real and what isn't. The sadness only deepened. I was in room 9 for what seemed like days. The final room. And that's exactly what it was, the end. No end house. Had an end and I reached it. At that moment, I gave up. I knew it would be in that in-between state forever, accompanied by nothing but darkness. Not even the hum was there to keep me sane. I had lost all senses. I couldn't feel myself. I couldn't hear anything. Sight was completely useless here. I searched for a taste in my mouth and found nothing. I felt disembodied and completely lost. I knew where I was. This was hell. Room 9 was hell. Then it happened. A light. One of those stereotypical lights at the end of the tunnel. I felt ground come up from behind below me, and I was standing. After a moment or two of gathering my thoughts and senses, I walked slowly toward the light. As I approached the light, it took form. It was a vertical slit down the side of an unmarked door. I slowly walked through the door and found myself back where I started, the lobby of No End House. It was exactly how I left it, still empty, still decorated with childish Halloween decorations. After everything that happened that night, I was still wary of where I was. After a few moments of normalcy, I looked around the place trying to find anything different. On the desk was a plain white envelope with a name handwritten on it. Immensely curious, yet still cautious, I mustered up the courage to open the envelope. Inside was a letter, again handwritten. David Williams. Congratulations! You have made it to the end of No End House. Please accept this prize as a token of great achievement. Yours forever, management. With the letter were 5 $100 bills. I couldn't stop laughing. I laughed for what seemed like hours. I laughed as I walked out to my car, and laughed as I drove home. I laughed as I pulled into the driveway. I laughed as I opened my front door to my house, and laughed as I saw the small 10 etched into the wood. So that is No End House. And that is the basis for the second season of Channel Zero, which is also called No End House. So let's get into the first episode of Channel Zero, Season 2, No End House. We start off the episode with a bunch of nondescript houses, and we hear someone either crying or getting off. Oh, looks like crying. Some chick with curly black hair is crouched next to a house. She slowly gets up and walks down the pathway. She walks right into the road without looking both ways and continues to mouth breathe. She turns to show us a jet black house at the end of the road. I'm sure the neighborhood council must love this dude. Black chick jiggles her tits down the road as we see someone walking a Doberman. Suddenly there's a dude following Tits McBreathy. She runs but is caught by the guy as soon as she reaches the house. He slams her face into the dirt and asks Lacey why she would do this to herself. We see that her arm has been etched with the words, "This is not real." And the dude takes out a lighter and I guess he's going to try to burn her arm off. Then we cut to a home movie of little girl Margot playing the piano. we see John Carroll Lynch blowing up a beach ball by the pool, and a little girl walking down the stairs, and tea party, and some more family bullshit. Then we see a vagina opening up, or a flower. Something opened. Eerie music as we push in on a sloth stuffed animal. The music hits an annoying crescendo as a little girl dives into the pool, and we get our title card. Now pantsless grown-up Margot is wandering around her room before she stops to eat some food. She is watching some terrible shit on a laptop when she gets a text that someone is watching her, and they remark about her cat shirt. She then walks to the window to see Lacey. Lacey and Pantsless are now sitting by the pool in bathing suits. I guess it's a good thing that Lacey brought hers. They exchange some dumb conversation before Lacey gets a text. Margot doesn't want to talk about why she is still at home, and Margot's mother asks them not to auction themselves off online. Ew. Lacey wants Margot to come with her, and then wants her to get some dick. Margot watches a video on her phone that features a vaginal flower and the door to No One House. Margot, in a one-piece, because that is realistic, and Lacey dive into the pool. We cut to them at a bar. They meet up with a hipster with an octopus tattoo, and his name is JD. Lacey asks about some dude, and JD says that Margot's date bailed. Some dude walks up and doesn't want Margot to leave. He tells her goodnight, though. And then we smash cut to all of them together. So that was weird. Lacey and JD engage in some pool play while Margot flirts with Creeper Dude. JD definitely wants some of Lacey. Creeper Dude talks about a dream where he's attacked by a horde of puppies as JD tries to kiss Lacey. JD says he is back in town because of No End House. Roll credits. JD strolls up to see Margot's phone. So then we get an exposition scene where JD explains that No One House has arrived, and it's always preceded by creepy videos, which is what we saw earlier, and then eventually it is revealed where the actual location is. Then he explains that each of the six rooms are even scarier than the last, so here we've only got six rooms. He says that most people never make it to the sixth room, and that those who do never make it back. So how do you know that people made it to the sixth room? They didn't come back to say, I made it to the sixth room. So, sounds like you're just making shit up. Margot and Creepshow are talking by the pool as Lacey tells a story about getting horny hearing about a succubus. Creepshow says he was a foster kid. Obviously, he's an oversharer because this is not something to talk about the first time you meet someone. He then throws into a depressing woe is me story, but then Margot one-ups him by saying her dad died. Well, that's a boner killer. So apparently John Carroll Lynch died from his allergy medication. So I guess that's a thing that happens. Margot says he fucking died and that she found him in front of the TV. We then see her find her dead dad. By the look of her, this just happened recently. So this makes Lacey a cunt for saying that Margot should not sit at home dwelling on her father's death because it only happened a year ago. Margot then fucks off back inside. The TV is on as Margot walks in. She looks at the empty couch as a feed cuts to a creepy No End House promo, this time with a bunch of new images, as well as numbers counting up before Nevin Street is shown. So now we know where the house is. Margot goes back outside. We cut to our four main people driving down the road. Lacey, JD, Margot, and Creepshow. As is tradition, I won't call someone by their name until that name is said. Hence, Creepshow. They turn onto Nevin Street to see a bunch of people out in front of No End House. Two people leave and throw up after Lucy asks them how it was. Some dude is there trying to light a cigarette but can't. I don't know what that point of that was, but that was there. Then JD asks Bearded Dude how he heard about this place and he says he was looking for it. There's a line out in front, but that quickly dwindles down. There is a plaque like No End House is an art installation. And our four main characters enter the house together, which is a pretty big departure from the source. The lights go on as we see a bunch of people in an entryway, so we've actually got eight people here going in at once. The words, "Beware the Cannibals," is written on the door. Bearded Dude opens the door as seven people follow him, including our four main people. There are eight busts on pedestals that are each of the eight people who enter the room. There's also creepy old-timey music playing, because if you want to creep people out, just play anything from like the 1920s. JD thinks that they 3D printed the bust while they were in line, and that's pretty fucking big leap to make at that point. The lights go out, and when they cut back on, The music is now all gravelly and distorted, and the busts are torn apart by severed hands, but JD's is not damaged for some reason. The door opens. Next room is written over it. The dark-haired girl bails out of the front of the door, though. Then JD's bust is shown still intact for some reason, and that was... Why would you leave after this one? This is nothing. The group of seven are in a square room with circle lights around it. The walls are white with faded blue paint on the bottom. The lights dim for a second before everyone turns to see that there is a person in the room with them. He's wearing a black mask that makes him look like he has a giant beard, and he is also wearing a dark blue suit. He walks around the room before stopping in front of JD. He then shoves JD. Woodface then walks up to Creepshow, then over to Lacey, and then finally to Margot. He whispers something into her ear that we do not hear, though. The lights cut out again and come back on. He is now gone, but there is now a giant streak of blood on the floor. There's a blonde girl standing at the foot of it, and the blood streak ends at the wall. She then proceeds to fuck off. So now there are six people left. JD reminds everyone that these people are actors, and Beardo tells them that they should leave. He then goes to the next room. Lacey asks Margot what he said, and Margot says he told her, "Welcome back, Martian," which we won't understand is something until the end of the show. We enter room 3, which is a revolving door that takes our group to a lovely hallway. And when I say our group, I actually mean just Margot now. So I don't know how that happened. On the table is a vagina flower. At the end of the hallway is a figure, and Margot starts to walk towards it. We hear someone crazily laughing, and we see that the figure at the end of the hallway is actually a mirror, but there is a person behind it holding onto the mirror. So Margot then decides to take a look and sees that there's a fat bearded guy standing behind the mirror laughing at her. She decides to haul ass and almost hits the exit, but instead goes to the next room. We enter room 4, and it is a triangle-shaped, like, attic-looking place, the end of which is a bunch of TV screens. We hear and see Lacey calling for Margot on them, but we get John Carroll Lynch sitting down about to die. We see a bunch of shots that could not have been taken unless someone was walking through the house, or if they were taken directly from Margot's POV when she found her dad dead, and John Carroll Lynch's face is all kind of fucked up in this video. The door then opens to the next room, so that was an easy room, and Margot enters the next room, which is room 5. This room is her living room. Seated on the couch is what appears to be John Carroll Lynch, but he's like a creepy, desiccated corpse kind of thing. He's all bloaty and weird looking. The TV jump scares her with family videos, and the bloaty man starts to make some noises like he's kind of cracking a little bit. Margot tries to turn off the TV, but she sees that bloaty is holding the remote. She creeps up to him and grabs the remote then, but of course he grabs her arm and then he tries to breathe, which is kind of gross. He gets up and tries to go for a hug. Hug your daddy, Margot. He missed you. Bloaty face then actually hugs her. But then he goes for a kiss, and now you're taking it too far, Bloaty face. Margot screams she wants to go home, and Bloaty face lets her go and says you have to go through to go home. And a door opens. Margot exits and is now outside of the back of No End House. Now, this door did not say exit on it, nor did it say next room. It's what we've been having on each one of these ones. So clearly she did not go through the exit. But we do see that Lacey is out here. Lacey doesn't look very well, but we do see that Creepshow, Beardy, and JD are also missing, as well as the other person that didn't really get much screen time at all. Lacey and Margot decide to go home, but their car will not start. So Lacey and Margot walk home. It's daylight when they arrive on Margot Street. Lacey asks her how she is doing since her dad died. She says she's okay. So, there you go. She's fine. More walking, and Margot asks if she wants to crash. Margot walks up to her house and goes to the door. She goes to the living room, and then we cut back to Lacey, who notices that Margot's home is number 6. We hear some whistling coming from the kitchen. Margot walks back downstairs and sees John Carroll Lynch standing in the kitchen grating cheese. He says, "Hey, Martian, how was your night?" As Margot looks on in shock, as the episode ends. So that was the first episode, a decent episode. I'm kind of curious to see what's going to happen here because, you know, as you know, you just heard if you were listening to the beginning of the episode, you know, No End House kind of ends the same sort of way where, You know, the big twist is like, well, he's not actually out of the house. So here we've got it where, you know, we think that she went through the exit, but really, no, this whole place now is, you know, room six. So I don't know if the entirety of the six episodes of this will take place in that, or if we're going or what we're going to do, but I am interested, to say the least. I'm very interested to see where this goes and what they can do with it, because after watching the first season, you know, they took something like Candle Cove and really fleshed it out and made it its own thing, and you know, despite some of the shortcomings the series had, they still managed to do a pretty decent job, and it was at least entertaining enough. So make sure to, you know, come back next week for the second episode of Channel Zero, No End House. And with that, we'll see you soon.